Couple words of introduction. There's a woman that lives down in Southern California. Her name is Agnes Sanford. Some of you maybe have heard of Agnes Sanford. Mm-hmm. She's 80 plus years of age, and Agnes is an amazing woman. A man that I know, a pastor, whose son was gravely ill and was extremely schizophrenic, was in a straitjacket and heavily sedated, was in about 15 minutes time made, after visiting with Agnes Sanford in private, was made absolutely perfectly well. Philip was his name, and functions well to this very day. And Philip's father, a pastor in Southern California, now spends his time in ministry efforts in talking about the ministry of healing. There is some credibility in what used to be, as I said at the microphone this noon, what was once upon a time considered the province just of the sawdust and shouters, now has come to be seen in a much broader light. Second word of introduction, a conference was held in Los Angeles of pastors from all three synods of the Lutheran Church. And this conference was attended by Agnes Sanford and a number of other people in the church who are involved in the ministry of healing. That conference went on for 2 days, and one part of the conference was Agnes Sanford calling the pastors forward to see if any of them wanted to be healed of any specific problems. 12 people came forward, and they indicated what the problems were. They ranged from mild depression to severe illness. And in a service of healing that evening, those 12 people were ministered to by Agnes Sanford and others. And at the end of the conference, or at the conclusion of the service, Agnes Sanford made the statement and the claim to the people who were there assembled that these 12 pastors had been healed. So the question was raised by some, do you mean completely healed? And she says, yes. All 12 of these people are completely healed. Then another pastor in the conference said, I think what we owe the church and we owe Agnes and we owe each other is to monitor the healings. In other words, over the next 3 months, 6 months, 1 month, 1 year, 2 years, let's find out about these 12 people, if they were in fact healed or if they were not healed. If they were healed, the church should hear about it. If they were not healed, the church should hear about that also. And so that conference was held about 6 months ago, and I haven't seen the results yet, but the 12 people who participated in that healing event agreed that they would have their progress monitored carefully and that it would be reported to the church. So we shall see what happens to that. Let's start with John and Ron and then Martin.
Okay, you said I was third. I'd be glad to be first. I thought I was responding to the two of them. All right. That changes what I'm going to do.
Let's change it then. I didn't know. That's okay. We'll start with Ronald. Okay. I said just as you were walking in that we'll keep it brief, 5 minutes or so. And
yeah.
Okay, Ron, come on and sit up here for the tape.
Well, I guess I'm going to talk a little more than I did the other night, but not in the history of medicine. Some of the things that I'm interested in and involved with just ending up with medical school are mainly patients, people who end up being patients. And I think a problem that I see a lot, I think the people I talk to who are involved in medicine or so-called healing arts, are that you have a science and you have art that goes with it. And a lot of what you deal with, and I think it's very much neglected, is the reassurance that you need to have that goes along with it. You have to go a long ways, not only in the suffering in the body, but also in the mind. I think what I've seen in my brief time is that most of the people that you run into are much more concerned about the possibility of being rendered helpless or dependent by their illness and with what's really going on with them itself. I think this is a problem that we as people don't address that much. We look too much at the science. We don't really, in medicine or in healing, make people realize that they are indeed unique individuals, that that individuality is not recognized, that and that each has unique problems that need to be realized before pushing pills and telling them what's wrong. I guess one of the things that I have great arguments with the people that I've been taught by, and I think it's something that's coming around, is that while ideally when you see people who have illness and you hope for a complete restoration to what they feel is their health, their well-being, I think sometimes your goals have to be that you can, if the disease cannot be halted, to postpone a lot of the consequences of the disease. I think what's not very well understood today is that most of the disease processes that we've become involved with in medicine are not cured, and they're only postponing treating the symptoms. Most of the diseases that we see today are chronic things that are a result of being alive. There may be, you know, in the future there may be something that comes up, but today mainly we're, you know, buying time and buying a quality of life rather than a goal for the most part. I guess one of the things that I've had from in the past is this. One of the things that was in my notes once was that one should never become so absorbed in the disease that he forgets the person who is the victim. I only have one more thing. I was listening to one of the tapes on healing before. There's a small segment I'd like to play. It expresses a lot of things a lot better than I would be able to. I think I could play that now.
Who is it on the tape?
Norstedt.
Fritz Norstedt.
It's a very short segment.
Tragic organism that we are, as put into minimize by running some kind of a phony battle between parts of his kingdom and other parts of his kingdom, between the created order and his redemptive work, and separating these things as though they were two different things. Well, I wish we could spend a lot of time on that particular thing. The way in which we have neglected to acknowledge his lordship over the atom and the molecule and over the fantastic organism that we are as humans. Who have been drawn up out of the dust of the ground by whatever process. We got, you know, we spend silly time wasting our time arguing about how and how long it took and all this kind of stupid stuff and missed the point of it. That it was God's will, God's hand, and he raised us up out of it. And if he wanted to take 6 billion years to put that mountain there, it's okay with me. If he did it, he'd have to figure it out. Because you can't even see those questions as being very large. If you see the largeness of his power and his goodness and his mercy and his grace. Well, it belongs to him. And when medicine makes a new discovery about the nature of something that's smaller and smaller and smaller inside of us, or science discovers something bigger and bigger and bigger out that way, then we can sit back with some kind of a happy feeling inside and say, out of my Father's hand, the smallest and the largest, the first and the last, the beginnings and the ends, birth and death. And he brings it all together. We're going to talk a little bit more about illness than disease, and start to make a distinction between illness and disease. I was reading a delightful statement of this sort of thing just a few days before coming out here, in which Dr. Cassell is writing in the report of the Hastings Institute that you may be acquainted with, their little journal that's called The Report from Hastings on the Hudson. Dr. Cassell says in there that it's quite important to make a distinction between disease and illness. So that the illness is what you have on the way to the doctor, and the disease is what you have coming back. He says, you go to the doctor, you say, I feel sick. And he does his skillful things and taps off a few parts of your insides and says, and sends them to the lab, and then he says, okay, what you've got is gallbladder disease. And all the time the patient says, gee, all the time I thought I was sick. And now it's the gallbladder that's sick. And all the attention goes to the gallbladder. And too often we forget that if somebody tells me that it's my gallbladder that's sick, that I got all kinds of other things going. Like, do I have to have an operation? Scary. If I do have an operation, is it going to be successful? Will it hurt? Will it bankrupt my family? Will I live or die? All these things are going on. And that's part of the illness. Relationships may tend to be narrowed down at a time that they really need to be expanded. Because illness tends to isolate. And we institutionalize the isolation. And we say the sicker a person is, the more is the indication that he ought to be in the hospital. And we haven't questioned that one. But some of us who have had deep and profound and distressing experiences in this area know that that is an assumption that should not be taken so lightly and so easily. I think that most of us should come to the place where we realize that there comes a time in the lives of many of us when we are so sick that the hospital is the last place we should be. Particularly when we're facing terminal stages of illness. To die at home is a lot better. Unless the nature of the illness is such that it can't be managed at home. That's often the case, obviously. But when it can, to be in community, so that death is related to life, becomes extremely important. Hospitals are too sterile for times such as that. In what kind of isolation? We have to be involved in life. And my daughter was
hearing Fritz Norstadt speak. Brought back memories of a meeting that I wanted to talk a little bit about. In 1967, the man in charge of medical mission work in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod was Dr. Wolfgang Bulley. He had been a missionary in India and then was in charge of the whole medical mission program throughout the world. And he arranged for a conference on the healing ministry of the church at Kunur in South India. He brought together about 30 people from various areas in Asia, Africa, Latin America, North America, as well as Europe. These were theologians, medical mission people, doctors, nurses, Fritz Norstadt, a number of people outside of the Lutheran family as well. We spent 2 weeks together in this mountain hotel about 7,000 feet above sea level in South India. The conference had been preceded by a 2-year study program under the direction of Tom Drage, of Valparaiso University. We were drilled through a rather large library of books on the healing ministry, and had papers, preliminary papers and so forth. And at the conference itself, a large number of papers were given and discussed. One dimension of the whole conference was, of course, the kind of example that was mentioned here before about this lady who did healing in particular cases. And I think I would say that, by and large, the consensus of the group was that things like this do happen, particularly where there's not a case of a diseased organ or something of that kind, but where the mind has been affected in some way or other, and that in turn has affected some parts of the body, a psychosomatic condition, where a situation is created. In a sense, the person is recreated through a new understanding, and that kind of healing can happen. And illustrations were given at the conference from all over the world, where people knew that things like this had happened. I thought I would make a contribution to this discussion tonight just by trying to summarize very briefly the theological presuppositions which underlay the conference itself, and which I think summarized the findings which eventually appeared in print in a variety of forms. I think we all came to the conclusion that healing, whether it is done through means, chemical means, let's say, which a doctor may use, a medical person may use, or whether it is done through the influence of a personality who creates a different situation, no matter what, is an act of God. It is God who is the healer, working through these various means. And in the context of a meeting of people from various cultures and various religions, we said also that it doesn't make any difference what religion a person belongs to, or what name he may give to the God he or she worships. In every case, it is the one true God whom we believe in, the triune God, who is responsible for the healing through whatever means that may be. And that means that a situation of health, which the Bible talks about, particularly the Old Testament, talks about much more than the healing process, that condition of health is a result of a harmonious relationship with matter, with oneself, with the world in terms of society, with other people, and of course with God. That this sort of fivefold situation of relationships forms the basis for a harmonious existence. And then we said also that if we approach the healing ministry from the standpoint of Christians, then we understand the gospel of God's love to be a gospel for the whole of man's life. It is not in any sense to be understood as dealing only with a specific dimension of man's existence. But when a Christian is engaged in the healing ministry, he does it from the standpoint of being a communicator of the gospel. And we also felt that any tendency to make the gospel deal, you know, only with a distant future was untrue to the nature of the gospel. It had to deal with man's existence here and now. We also said, against the background of some non-Christian religions, that we have to approach the person with the understanding that his life is real, his existence is real. I think those of us who had served in India felt that was particularly important to instill in people who were ill the desire to live, particularly in the vast mass of Hindu people. They look upon life as an illusion, something unreal, and that the sooner they can rid themselves of this this prison of matter in which they are, the sooner they will eventually reach some kind of a heavenly state. And in a way, we felt that those who were engaged in that kind of a environment had to convince people that life was real, and that the body in which they felt they were imprisoned, but where God had put them, was a real body, and they could be led into health and wholeness in that. Then we also said that in the face of the fact that not everyone is healed, even our Lord did not heal everybody, and later in the epistles and the Acts of the New Testament, there are examples of people not being healed. Paul prayed for to get rid of the thorn in his flesh, whatever that was, but he didn't get it. He was stuck with it. And I think one living example that we had at the conference was a certain Ruth Myers, who was a registered nurse at the great mission hospital in Vellore, the Ida S. Scudder Hospital. And she had to come to the conference in a wheelchair. She's been crippled all her life and has a remarkable personality. No one would ever suspect from talking to her or from looking at her face that she has spent all of her life as a cripple. And I suppose most of us would say, why hasn't she been healed? But she says, I am healed. I'm a whole person, although I can't walk. So that we had to make our peace with that and try to understand that the healing ministry is not necessarily aimed at removing a disability or whatever you want to call it, but has as one of its main purposes to give meaning to life. And Ruth found her meaning, the meaning in her life and her crippled condition, that she was able to minister to people who couldn't understand how they could live a meaningful life together with some illness of some kind, and she could demonstrate that to them. And finally, the fifth point that I think grew out of the conference was that the relationships between people based on mutual forgiveness and acceptance are an essential element in health. That it is possible to live in a state of shalom with an illness if the people around us are accepting us and we are accepting them, and that there is a state of mutual forgiveness, so that there's meaning to life and meaning to the mutual relationships that we have. I could say much more about the Kanur Conference, but I think that that's enough at the moment. Thank you.
When you invited me, I thought maybe I was going to be asked to respond to either a difference of opinion or something with which I disagreed. I didn't find that. That doesn't make for a very exciting evening. So I, but that's fine if we don't disagree. Seems to me there are some obstacles to a full ministry of healing from the medical profession, from the helping arts, from the church, from other people. And let me just point to a couple of the obstacles as I see them. One is not to understand a biblical vision of shalom, but to really have the church, it's their souls we want, is the title of a book that really said the church does not have that much to do with our body. We're really more with the spirit. And to make that separation between body and spirit is one of our handicaps, I think. Seems to me the lessons we've been having in Epiphany point to the fact not only did Jesus come in the flesh, I guess we all know the first heresies were to deny his fleshliness, that he really was only a spirit, or it's called docetism, and when Jim had the studies in 1 John. But not only did he come in the flesh, but when he ministered, he fed people, and he healed people, and he touched people. So that full ministry of healing, I think we still have some hang-ups. I also think there are, quote, healers that are bizarre, and so there is a prejudice against an Agnes Sanford, because an Agnes Sanford, is that like Amy Semple McPherson, who passed the clothesline instead of an offering plate, so all you could do is hang a dollar bill over it. You couldn't give change. And I went to one of her services, and the first thing was, there's somebody here with a $20 bill in his pocket, and what's keeping him from healing is that he won't put that in the offering. Then she passed the plates, and then I walked out. Those kinds of manipulation of people at a point of their vulnerability, I mean, that's really what that is, gives a kind of bad name to what I have experienced as a very legitimate healing ministry on the part of a group like the Order of St. Luke the Physician, which is largely Episcopalian, services of healing. Vicki and I talked last week, or we all talked, the sacrament of extreme unction is now called anointing for healing, which is much more consistent with James. You used to tremble. If the priest came with the oil, you really said, ooh, this is it, huh? I mean, to call it extreme unction, psychologically and medically, is the poorest kind of ministry. You know you've had it if the priest came. Whereas in James, it was anointing for healing. So it seems to me some bizarre thing. Joyce just asked, yes, there are mountain people who handle snakes. Mark said you shall, Mark's gospel, the end of it. Dubious verses anyway from verse 8 on, but it says you shall be bitten by snakes and not die, so they prove their faith by having poisonous snakes bite them, and once in a while one of the preachers dies. That kind of gives a whole aura of healing that I think is unfortunate. I think the major handicap to the healing arts of medicine, Ron has already spoken to, I would simply underline them, that much of medicine has been too much doctors as technicians instead of physicians, to treat a gallbladder instead of a human being with a malfunctioning gallbladder, I think has been part of our problem. That not to understand the whole person and a lot of other things going on, I think medical schools now have a lot more to do with the treating of the whole person, and I think that's been needed. The final thing, which is a detriment to the healing ministry in this country, or to the healing arts in this country, is the physician's pay schedule. And I don't think that it's, maybe it will be controversial. The poor folk of this land do not have good medical attention. So it's an economic issue, and I'm sorry that it is. I think basically the assumptions of what doctors and dentists make is out of proportion, and walk into any emergency room in the middle of a city and see what kind of care the poor folk get when they're sick, and I think that's one of the tragedies of our country. You can get the AMA excited when you say that's going to bring socialized medicine, but I think finally it will. And I think less than half the doctors belong to the AMA now, so I think there are things shifting.
responses.
I think, it seems to me that just in the last year, I have become more and more aware of how sort of, and I believe in the medical profession, I believe doctors are competent, and I believe that wonderful things have come about through research and through chemical medicine. And yet, it seems like more and more you realize that the human body is a huge mystery, and that, tell me if I'm right, Ron, it's just there's so much, doctors, a well-meaning, well-educated, expert craftsmen at medicine, they just are not simple answers to all the disease. It seems like in our society we're kind of geared to, well, we'll go to the doctor and he'll give me a pill and I'll be fine. And I've become more and more aware. Maybe other people have been more aware of that. But it just seems like the last year or so I've realized that it just isn't that simple.
I guess, I couldn't agree more. People I've seen, I guess the thing that makes you somewhat cynical and somewhat bitter is you see someone who smokes a pack and a half a day of cigarettes, puts down a six-pack of beer and a couple of martinis, and comes in after 20 years and wants the magic cure. One of the things that I've talked with friends about quite often is that things that are very much mysteries to us, because I guess we're fairly motivated towards health. I'm sure that most of the people here are. I've seen many people come in and demand that they, demand health. But indeed, they do have possibly rights. But I see a very small percentage of the people, probably a much larger percentage here, that are willing to assume the responsibility for their own bodies, who are willing to accept the responsibility to learn about their bodies, who very openly are bitter and complaining that they don't understand anything at all about medicine, and very bitter about placing their, as she said, trust in people in medicine or in the health professions, but who take very little initiative on their own toward health, toward understanding their body. The knowledge is there. It's open. They say, I don't understand that. Say, did you ask any questions? Well, no, I didn't ask any questions, but I still understand that. These are certain biases I have from where I'm, I feel a little strange because, I'm a lot of the time looking from the other side back again where I was maybe a few years ago. It's uncomfortable.
What do you mean by the last thing you said? You're looking back.
When I was a student or before, I was very much into, it's one thing, it's a very fashionable sort of thing to criticize government, medicine, what else? Communists,
teachers.
Pointy head intellectuals, I think that I feel the same sort of things now. When people talk about medicine, and I think even though you're aware of the flaws, perhaps more than anyone else, I feel the same sort of things that you do when people say the church is irrelevant, church has no meaning for me.
God is dead. It's that sort of thing, that sort of feeling. It's like, you've got to, you know, enough straight on that or something. But there's very valid points made.
I think we talked about a little bit about healing when we were talking about prayer, and Christian Eric, I remember talking about what our responsibility is to others when either they are sick or dying, and we talked about prayer and how you can say prayers for people, but we also talked about if at all possible to be with that person and to try and just help them through that. And one of the things that I have seen, you know, especially with Paul Bergman, is that when he first came here, the medicine that he's on has helped his pain, and he's got warm place to live, good food and Becky's care. But also he's got, around here he's got people that care about him and spend time with him and are interested in him. And I think
they have a king. God wanted to be the only one to have them look, they wanted them to look up to him as a king, but they wanted a king so he could install. I think too today in healing, people tend to, rather than to bother with faith or go to the effort to have faith and to work on their faith end of it, they'd rather deal with something more tangible. They'd rather reach out and hold a pill in their hand or see some sort of device in the doctor's hand. They want to see something and feel something tangible rather than to deal with the area of faith. This is in regard to that. And yet why is it that we tend to be going more to the doctors for this part of us and our needs?
I don't know if I'm disagreeing with Werner or a couple things or not. I think it's just another side. I think, but it is quite different. I think in tribute to the doctor, he is less judgmental when I come. I think there's a positive side to that. I think sometimes you can't really be sick and be welcome in church. So you have to go somewhere else. I mean, and I mean sometimes literally physically sick. We were at a conference where the pastor said, one of my troubles is as soon as someone is disabled, they don't come to church anymore. I mean, like somebody's now in a wheelchair or without a limb. And we really have a very strange kind of dynamic sometimes that you really can't make a mistake and be there. Well, if your mistake is alcoholism or mental disturbance, and the whole tenor of the place there was, if you had enough faith, you wouldn't get sick, you have to find someone else to go to. I think part of it is a judgment on the church. I mean, I'm not sure that disagrees, but it is another factor in that, and the doctor really takes you. You're allowed to be sick in a doctor's office. Everybody knows that. It's okay.
Except the doctor doesn't deal with the spiritual part of the person, which I think is a big factor that the church has to undertake.
Some doctors do.
Some do, true, but I think the vast majority of doctors don't.
But that's what Ron is talking about.
Yeah.
You see, hopefully there's more of a trend towards that.
I guess one of the things Libby was talking about the magic pill is that, and one of the things I've seen, and I don't know if I find it maybe frightening, and maybe it was directed towards people with communication in newspapers. I read in the newspaper things that make good claims about health. Either the miracle breakthrough drug that when I read the journal article really isn't. It's experimental. It may never make it through, but it's a generic drug that's going to cure something. Or the great play that heart transplant surgery made, although it's a trick, it's a gadget. It's only a means toward an end of understanding how the body works. On the other hand, I see other things that make good print. corrupt doctors, crooked ones. The big malpractice is lots of black, lots of white, very little gray. Mm-hmm. I think that that's, I see that in a lot of things, I guess, but I think it stands out in real stark contrast in things I've seen in medicine, too. I want a cure. The ground between complete cure and death is where medicine lies, but that's not where it lies in most people's minds. You're either well, or you're sick, or you're dead. Most of medicine lies in that ground in between. And I don't know if anybody wants to comment or...
Sometimes, Mary?
I think another reason maybe why we're not healed, I think St. Carol speaks to be one of his books, because we live under the illusion that pain is to be avoided at all costs. And when I think of myself, for example, sometimes if I have a headache, the first thing I want to do is take a couple of aspirin, because I don't want to suffer with my headache, or find out why it is that I have 6 weeks for a headache. And as long as I can make the pain go away, I don't deal with the cause of the tension or the anger or whatever it is that gives me the headache and the pain. And I think that does keep a lot of us from being healed in the full sense. Because we just think that with medical science like it is, the last thing in this world we have to do is suffer. Because there is something we can do.
Well, anyhow, I'd like to suggest that sometime when you're thumbing through the news, you can look at worship, you notice the service of private confession in there. I believe that's a healing service and an interesting addition and needed addition to this hymnal. It does say that it's the province of the clergy. It kind of makes that rather clear. I don't know if you want to read around that red rubric or not, but please notice that service of private confession in there. I'd like to understand that as being a healing service if anything.
Just one final, it is kind of ironic that if we are sick, we go to the doctor, and I think we should, and I think that's part of God's providence, and we never say, if it be God's will, I hope you can make me well. Every assumption is that he wants us well. That's why we went to the doctor, and there's no hang-up. I don't think in our prayers, then, when we're sick, we have to say, if it be your will. I think we can assume it's God's will. God's will is not always done.
Right.
But I don't think we need any more if in doing those things that are therapeutic than we do when we go to the doctor. I have no question that I want to get well, that God wants me to get well, and that I hope I'm at a good doctor. Well, I think we can have just as much kind of assurance that God has revealed his will toward health in our prayers.
He's going to work on the other part, though, when you don't get well, accepting that God's will, although it may be that he should get well, he hasn't gotten well. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I see, that frightens me about.
Do you rebel when you don't get well, when the doctor has done what he could and you still can't get well? I don't think
no.
A faithful person does.
Well, but what I'm talking about is that part of the body, people that aren't Christians. Who can somehow get them to understand why what's happening is happening?
That's when you have to give life meaning.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
That's just, we as Christians got a head start because we understand, hopefully, everything that happens to us is happening because of God's will, you know, depending on how much we fight it or don't fight. But there's a whole lot of people that don't understand that.
and some way to reach them. But this money thing, because they, you know, it fits back what we were talking about earlier about why the people that are doctors say it could be.
That's part of our witness, I would think. And I'm not sure we're making a very good witness right now. I think that's part of what we could be doing better. I thought you heard me saying almost, if you have enough faith, you'll get well. No. So if you don't get well, oops, I didn't have enough faith.
No.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.